In 2018, Floridians voted in favor of restoring the right to vote for millions of formerly incarcerated felons. But by mid-2019, Republican Governor Rick DeSantis and the Republican-led state legislature passed a law prohibiting former felons from voting until they paid off any outstanding fines and fees connected to their case. A confusing payment system combined with the financial hardships that many face meant that the majority of felons in Florida wouldn't be able to pay these fines and would never have their voting rights restored. Last month, however, a federal judge ruled that law unconstitutional and in violation of the 24th Amendment, calling it a, quote, pay-to-vote system. Sean Morales Doyle is a senior counsel in the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice, and he was one of the attorneys representing the plaintiffs in the trial challenging the law.
The 24th Amendment, which prohibited poll taxes, actually said you can't make voting contingent on paying a poll tax or other tax. The folks that wrote the 24th Amendment knew that maybe states would try to be creative about how they would put a price tag on voting. And that's what Florida did. So this wasn't exactly a poll tax, but it was requiring people to pay taxes to vote. And the judge said that violates the 24th Amendment.
According to Sean, about nearly 800,000 people formerly charged with felonies in Florida will now get their voting rights restored.
In terms of race, this policy of felony disenfranchisement in Florida and across the country disproportionately impacts people of color. In Florida, the impact on Black Floridians was really stunning. Prior to the passage of Amendment 4, it was estimated that one out of every five Black voting age adults in Florida was disenfranchised as a result of a conviction in their past. The data that our expert got together showed that not only is felony disenfranchisement something that disproportionately impacts Black Floridians, but that this requirement of paying to vote disproportionately impacts them, that the vast majority of people who have a conviction owe some money because the Florida criminal justice system just heaps debt on people. But Black Floridians are more likely to owe money and more likely to owe more money than their white counterparts. But the majority of people with felony convictions in Florida are white. It is a population that is disproportionately Black compared to the general population. But actually, the majority of people with felony convictions in Florida are white. And so it's also important to think about this not in terms of race, but in, as you point out, in terms of income, in terms of wealth. And the claim that we won on back in the fall and that we won again on after this trial, one of the claims was that this is unconstitutional wealth discrimination. Obviously, people who go through the criminal justice system, the economic realities that they face are pretty dire. It's hard to get a job. And most of them go into the criminal justice system already in a bad spot when it comes to money.
Well, so I'm curious whether the judge acknowledged that disparity, the racial and economic disparities in his decision. And we're talking about Judge Robert Hinkle here, who decided the case, who's at the U.S. District Court in Tallahassee.
Yes, he did acknowledge it. One of our claims was that this was actually a form of race discrimination. And the judge held that this law wasn't passed with the intent to discriminate against Black Floridians, although he said that was a close call. But in ruling on that claim, he acknowledged the disproportionate impact that it has on Black Floridians. And of course, ruling on the wealth discrimination claim, he made very clear that he thinks that it's unconstitutional to deny someone the right to vote because they're too poor to afford it. And he has acknowledged this disparity in the past as well. There's no doubt that Florida's legislature knew when they passed this law that they were passing a law that was going to disproportionately impact Black Floridians. That was made clear to them. Our client, the League of Women Voters, the NAACP, and many, many others were sounding the alarm about the impact this would have on the Black community in Florida. And they went ahead and passed the law anyway, knowing the impact that it would have. And the judge said it was a close call whether they did that intentionally to discriminate against Black Floridians, ultimately decided that it wasn't, that we hadn't proven that it was intentional. But there's no doubt that everyone knew and the impact that it was going to have and that it has, in fact, had that impact.
Sean, given the fact that this has gone back and forth and the community that we're talking about here has probably gotten a lot of mixed messages. And now, of course, we're dealing with a global pandemic, which is affecting, among other things, our ability to get out to the polls and to vote. How are former felons who now have the ability to vote, what is it that they can do to make sure that they're taking advantage of that opportunity, given the coronavirus crisis that we're facing right now, among other things?
Yeah, it's a great question. Florida thankfully, in some respects, Florida elections are more prepared for this pandemic than some other states. Florida already allows anybody to vote by mail, and Florida already has a system of online voter registration. So folks can start getting registered now. They can do it from home, and they can vote from home as well. And so hopefully, in that respect, Florida has made this a little bit easier on people. To your point, it really has been shameful how the state, in addition to passing this law that disenfranchised so many people, also just made it impossible for people to know whether they were eligible or not. They just failed to provide any guidance whatsoever. And as the judge described it, this was an administrative train wreck, this law. They didn't just put a price tag on voting. They made it so people can't even figure out what the price is. In Florida, it's impossible to figure out what you owe. And so the judge's opinion, I would say he did two things. One of them was make sure that everyone got their rights restored. But just as important was that he provided a way for people to know whether they're eligible and to get registered. And he gave clarity to people and said that these financial obligations don't count against you. If you're unable to afford them, you can get registered now. And if you don't know what you owe and can't figure out whether you're unable to afford them, he provided a process for asking the state for an opinion on that. And if you don't get an answer in 3 weeks, you can get registered. So he's cleared the way for people to start getting registered. And thankfully, Florida's got the mechanisms in place for people to do that and to get voting without having to risk their health.
Sean, I want to ask you before, as we're wrapping up here, I want to ask you a little bit about the likelihood that this population will vote. And if they do turn out to vote, you mentioned the former felon population in Florida is up in the hundreds of thousands of people who've now essentially been given the green light to vote. How likely is it that this population will vote in 2020? And if they do turn out to the polls, what effect could that have, given that Florida, as we know, is a critical state, particularly in a presidential election?
Amendment 4 was such a thrilling moment for so many people in Florida, and it impacts such an enormous percentage of Florida's population that I think there was a lot of enthusiasm and excitement about getting people engaged and getting people voting. And I think that this law put somewhat of a damper on that and slowed that down. But with this ruling, I'm hopeful that that enthusiasm and excitement will pick back up and a lot of people will get engaged. In terms of the impact that it could have, I mean, it could be a huge impact on the election. But the impact, I think, is that it's making this election look more like what Floridians wanted it to look like. As I said, 64.5% of Floridians' voters said they wanted to expand democracy. They wanted to welcome this million plus people back into the conversation. That's what they want their elections to look like. And that's a huge impact, no matter which way these new voters vote. And I think what's a shame is how much the legislature and others seem to be thinking about how they think these voters are going to vote when they make decisions about who has the right to vote. And none of us should be deciding who can vote and who can't based on whether we think they're going to side with us when they go to the polls. However, the election plays out, at least now we can say that it accurately reflected what Florida's eligible adult citizens wanted the outcome to look like.
Well, as you said, the majority of Floridians did vote for this. Sean Morales-Doyle is senior counsel in the Democracy Program at the Brennan Center for Justice and was one of the lawyers representing the plaintiffs in the recent trial challenging the Florida fine law. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.